How do we survive sourcing?
If you have a shitty product, you have a shitty product. Try to get rid of some of the competitors in a legal way.
A lot of people are spending more money on their images than they would do to get the right product.
I find quality there quite subjective because I may find this very good, what another one says like, dude, that's not really good quality. If you see the product for $35 or pounds or euros on Amazon, it doesn't mean we're making that money. You are selling an idea to them that they could or should work with you, because to be honest, they don't need you.
How do you survive Amazon? Welcome to Surviving Amazon, the podcast that exposes the brutal truth behind selling on Amazon, and only the strongest survive. We bring you insider stories and strategies from experts and sellers who've been through it all, the ups, the downs, and the moments that made them question if it was even all worth it. I'm Johnny Bradley, and today we're joined by Sebastian Hertz, who has fought through the chaos of Amazon selling since 2014, as well as founding Zignify Global Product Sourcing with his partner Yulia in 2021. They have a team of 60 women plus Sebastian. They've lived it. They've survived it. They've helped hundreds of companies do the same. And Sebastian's here to share exactly how they did it. So my first question to you is, how do you survive Amazon?
Just by, you know, listening to people like you, man, you make this whole thing a lot better. I mean, congrats, kudos really for naming it Surviving on Amazon. I love it. That's probably not the serious answer, but to be honest, I mean, stick to it. Try to get rid of some of the competitors in a legal way, if necessary, or, you know, launch new products, bring new products, work on your products, make them better, fight on images, look into your PPC, and just never give up.
Never give up. Because actually, I've seen people do this over years now. Like, we've started doing this in like 2017. And when we canvass quite a few people in 2021, we're looking at, why do some people get success and why do some people not? You know, how do they survive? The people that did nothing, the term they used was life got in the way, right? Like, just basically shit happened, right? Yeah. And I stopped doing it. And that's kind of echoing what you're saying, is persevere, push through, work on your images, do this, you know, and actually work on it. But from your standpoint, because you guys, you're sellers on Amazon, right? And that's where—
Yeah, we have two on brands, plus a sourcing company and a few more businesses.
Exactly. So you have this like really unique position of seeing both sides of the same mm-hmm. coin. Like, you've worked on the brands and you see that from a brand perspective, but also you touch a lot of people's businesses through the sourcing process, which find is, it's a very easy place for people to mess up on and pay too much or get a quality product that's really bad. And ultimately, we know that product is the most important thing, and you help guys and girls and businesses get the right product. So from a product perspective, from a sourcing perspective, how do we survive sourcing?
Well, to be honest, that's what I see sometimes as well. It's like, people are willing, especially over here in Germany, to spend more money on great images compared to spending product on sourcing a really, really great product. But I think anybody, you know, any coaching system, or I guess I think one of your first rules and lessons as well, I mean, if you have a shitty product, you have a shitty product. I mean, you gotta have a good product in order to sell it. You gotta have a product you may still withstand several years against competition with a Me Too product as well. But the prices, of course, and the retail prices will go down. But I mean, it is one of the most important things, of course, to look into your product, because you can only fake reviews to a certain level, right? Or get them from friends and family. Then the real truth kicks in. And if the real buyers leave negative reviews, well, it's going to be quite tough to get them to convert them to positive ones. So one of the basic things for sure is you should look into a good product. Nevertheless, of course, customer service, images and everything, of course, as well. But how do you survive sourcing? I mean, just do it.
Well, it's easier said than done. But you mentioned something I think was really interesting. You said a lot of people are spending more money on their images than they would do to get the right product, or even sample the right product, right? Or they have like a slight concern with it, but they're like, oh, that'll do, right? So when you guys look at sourcing, do you say, right, we will budget this much for sampling and that's it? Or like, how should we be doing this to make sure that we do have the right product, right? A seller goes, I have confidence that not only is this the right supplier, but this is the right product, the right material, or the right whatever. Yeah. Is there a monetary figure that you can put on that, or is there a
that's process? Maybe you open my eyes right now, or me repeating this thing, saying that they spend more money on images than on sourcing. Maybe we don't charge them enough. But I mean, whether you do this with a sourcing company or you do this on your own, I mean, don't look for getting two or three quotations. This is the very, very beginning when you want to get started, for sure. But if you need it, if you mean it really serious, you want to get a product out there because you've probably done the analysis, because you used several tools out there and found out that this niche has a good chance of, you know, getting another seller in there, and you're making your 200 grand a month. Again, I can only tell you what we do, because we found this as one of the best ways to do. We target to find about 30 potential producers, so 30. And not all of them, of course, will be able to do it, which hence also when you talk to less potential suppliers, also there will be less people who can really do the product. And they will give you, in the end, you may have two or three quotations, but the target, imagine you have 5, 6, 8, 10, 12, 15, or maybe even 20 valid quotations. Do you know the leverage of your negotiation?
Yeah, I was about to ask, like, how do you guys use, when you're getting like 10, 20, whatever quotations, and you're seeing, hey, look, these guys, they've got comparable products, but the price is here. Are you really leveraging those, or how do you get to the next step by going, I mean, I want a better price?
That's of course the reason why we target to get more quotations than only two or three, because you have a higher or longer lever. Means you can play against one supplier against the other one and say, guys, look, I mean, we do like your quality, but there's many, many others who we also have. Yeah, it's maybe not as good the quality, but the prices are there, like they're a third of yours. We do want your quality. We do want the best. But I mean, you know, you got to come closer with the prices. And then there will be suppliers who say, no, sorry, I will not do this. I know my quality. I stand my price. I will not do it for less. I need to feed my people. I need to feed my family. And I want to make some money. But then you may still find other suppliers who will, for the same product, say, you know what? We're at the beginning. Maybe we don't need to make that much money at the moment. We'll do it for less. So on this, you only find out by getting more quotations. So of course, I mean, also when you do this on your own, leverage that. I mean, look, if you buy yourself a good car, and imagine when the products that you will buy, they're more than a good car. Because imagine you're buying whatever, 10,000, 20,000, 50,000 pieces of that a year, let it be $3. You're spending $150,000 on that per year. That's more than a car, and you will probably do this every year, or even if it's just 20,000 on it. But now, if you go buy yourself a car, you will try to negotiate with several different suppliers, right? Or several different dealers. You don't go to one. You maybe don't go two or three. If it's a real car that hurts your bank statement, you probably check with a few more and maybe consider even driving whatever 200 miles to the west to pick up your car.
That's a really good, it's a really good analogy, because I think when you see like a beginner, but even people that have been in the game for a while, they'll, I guess, make assumptions about the price before knowing the price and not speaking with suppliers. And I think you mentioned something really interesting, which is, you know, there may be another supplier with this in basically a different situation. Maybe they need more clients. They're happy to take a hit on the cost. Now, we don't know what's going on in their business. You know, are they needing to just get more orders in because they want more long-term customers? So I think it's always worth, like you said, just going to as many people as possible. But often what has happened to us, and what I've seen many, many times, is a supplier will go, no, we have the best quality. Right? What do you say to that?
Where is he from? From China?
Yeah.
Everybody says that, right? And exactly, yeah. We hear, of course, as well, the same thing, like the best quality. I mean, I find quality there quite subjective, because I may find this very good. What another one says, like, dude, that's not really good quality. I give you an example, like our cosmetic, one of our brands is a cosmetics brand, you know, and they say it's like, this is the best quality. It's like, no, we have this ingredient in there. We think that's the best. Oh, and he may think it's like, oh, but no, it's not the best. So anyway, I mean, having the best quality is what anybody, of course, says out there, in order to sell. And if they can't go by better quality, what do? They go by lower price. So everybody will, of course, tell you, what I sell you is a very good deal, and oh, by the way, I'm losing money. So, of course, they want to convince you. What you should, of course, do.
Hey, come on, they're not, you know, we see this all the time. It's like, oh yeah, but we're not making any money on this. Well, don't sell
it. I mean,
it
this
then.
May happen if it's a strategic buyer or so, sorry, if it's a strategic customer or so, where some companies will then later say, oh, but I want to show that I won this client, so I'm going to make even loss on this. I come originally from Fortune 500 companies. This is where I spent my first life in. And yeah, you sometimes bought projects. Means like you knew you're going to lose money, but you want this client or you want to keep them. And what you see is, I mean, most of the established sellers, like, you would be surprised how many times it's possible to find better prices and how much that makes a difference in possible savings, what you could do with your best seller products. So where you could actually make more money, more profit without selling a single unit more, just because you buy the same product.
And even selling less units, you could make more money then.
And I mean, if we're open and honest, if we're thinking like a long way around this, also selling, you know, like very expensive products, but therefore only a few times, but making more margin on it. Less inventory, you have less bound capital, you have less hassle of fulfillment, you make more money with less units. That's nice, actually, isn't it?
Absolutely. So for existing sellers, right? Mm-hmm. Let's say I've been 2-3 years I've been selling, maybe I've got a really good ranking. I haven't sourced my product since 3 years ago. Is that, and I haven't, you know, I spoke to someone the other day, and just to put this in perspective, they are a bestseller and they still pay 30% deposit and 70% on completion of product. And I said, why have you never renegotiated the payment terms? And they're like, I didn't know I could, right? Mm-hmm. So what are those things? And I'm sure they've got a few of them, that existing sellers, if they don't know, they're just not doing. What are those real key things, like trying to find a cheaper product or whatever? What are the big ones that sellers could do right now?
You just give me a great idea for tons of content I should create. I have my presentations, they have several slides of hacks where each slide, I think, has like 10 plus hacks or so on one slide. Now, I mean, of course, what you can do besides the product, besides the price, besides getting lower cost for the product, getting, for example, a faster production means, like, if your supplier yourself usually tells you, it's like, oh, yeah, I mean, the next 6 weeks we're booked out, your production will be then after 6 weeks, it will start because our lines are full. And you will go to, and you may negotiate, and it's like, hey, can you just, you know, it's a small order, can you squeeze it in? Like, can we get it done? Can you get started in the next 1.5 to 2 weeks? Or the payment terms, like you say, not a 30-70, but maybe even if it's a 20-80. Or if it's, let's say, whatever, 20-30-50, means that, for example, you don't pay 100% upfront before shipment, but the last 50%, for example, you pay after 60 or 90 days of receiving. So when the goods are in your hands, you could start selling your products already, make money before you even pay your supplier. Or later we do a 20-80, 20 down payment, and then after receiving it a month, two, three later, you pay the rest of the 80%. You may...
Is that possible? Because a lot of sellers will go, oh my God, like, why are they going to just send me the products? And they're like, oh, like, what if I, what if I don't pay
them for a long time, for 3 years already, right? You are making a substantial investment into their company. I mean, of course, you can't really do this with the smallest offers. But when you see you're a bestseller, you're turning quite a few goods. And they also see, I want to keep you. I mean, here comes one thing, you know, you go in, whether with a sourcing company or somebody else, to find alternative producers, kind of put them a little bit under pressure. I always say, though, please, everything, make everything always ethically correct. Those guys, those factories, they also have a family, most likely. They also have a dream. They also want to build a business. I mean, they do the business out of the same reason probably as you do. Financial freedom, building your dream, buying the next Maserati or BYD. I don't know what they want to buy. But, you know, so let them also earn money. Otherwise, they'll do the business once and then they run away and never do business with you again.
Is a good strategy for that? I know we've spoken about this before, but how transparent should you really be with suppliers about your costs of running your business, particularly on Amazon?
And especially when you go to Europe or so, and you lay down and you show them, like, look, guys, we want to sell the product. And if you see the product for $35 or pounds or euros on Amazon, it doesn't mean we're making that money. You know what? Here's a breakdown. 15% Amazon, 90% VAT, this and that for FBA, this for fee, storage fees, for long-term storage fees, and 20 to 30% ACOS for ads. And all of a sudden, it was like, wow, you really don't make much money. It's like, true. But we still want to sell on Amazon. That's one of the first channels. So this is why we're sincerely asking you, yes, for what may seem to you insane prices. But that's what today's business has happened. That's what happened in today's world, is that those are the cost structures that are fixed, and I can't negotiate with Amazon to say, can you do me a favor, only take 3% out of, instead of 15? And then they start understanding this, of course, as well. The Chinese, they understood it. They know it. But I see this as very useful. You don't show the full numbers, but show them, like, you know, basics of where does the cost go, because nobody wants you to become rich without them becoming rich as well.
True. So that they need to be making money, or, you know, if you have an existing business, so like if you were a bestseller and you're taking your production elsewhere, or you're looking for a second factory, you know, just in case, you have a lot of leverage then, right? So you can go, well, this is what we're doing. Here's our figures. This is our profit. The reason why we need to find another supplier is because we need to get to this level. We need to get to this production cost. You know, what can you do?
Exactly.
Yeah. Or, you know, maybe like we'll commit to ordering this much stock, but you need to store it for X amount of
months. And those are the other ones. Can you store it in between there? Can we make whatever you, let's have the packaging included. Or other things that you may negotiate is if your product doesn't consist out of, you know, one part only, that you, for example, bring in the raw material, that you bring in the packing material, that you bring all the other things on your own to negotiate, of course, prices down as well, to have the in-between storage, to use different forwarders or their forwarder, or combine it with something else, to have the quality inspection, for example, financed. I mean, of course, don't let them do quality inspection, get a company like ours or any other a quality inspection company in and let them pay for it. There's so many things you can negotiate, not only the price.
On that note then, should we be negotiating on every element? So to break this down further, we've got our products. Maybe there's an accessory comes with the product. There's some packaging as well. And there's an inspection. And maybe there's also testing, like certifications testing. Mm-hmm. From day one, should we be trying to negotiate on all of those things? Or do we kind of just, you know, if it's profitable, we just do it and then we negotiate later on future orders?
Is it enough savings in there where you said that would be worth spending my time on? Do it.
Okay, fair.
I mean, on the other hand, if it's a product which is very specialized, where you know you may only find whatever 2-3 suppliers, I mean, they may or may not give you a quotation. You know, you can't, how do you say in English, beggars can't be choosers, right? And always please think, guys, this is a very good question that you ask, for the simple fact of in the very beginning, when you go for suppliers and you talk to them, please do not believe that you're buying. You are selling at this moment. You are selling an idea to them that they could or should work with you. You try actually to convince them it's worth their time to work with you. Because to be open, to be honest, they don't need you. They exist there, in this spot, in this factory, today, without you ever having called them. So they exist, and that's why many of them may also say, like, I give you an example. If there's a factory who produces for the four largest helmet factories, bicycle helmet factories, and they don't even let you on their trade show booth, if you don't have like a sincere interest of buying 250,000 units or more per year, they will not talk to you at a trade show, right? So again, be open, look into things. And when you see there's considerable cost involved, or I always let my suppliers also like break down, like what's the cost for the packaging? What's the cost for this? I always know the packaging cost when I see this is a paper folding box. And I was like, that's 44 cents. For a paper box? Come on, guys, let's find something cheaper. Of course, you discover those small things also just by looking into your own products.
Will a supplier try and actually make profit on things like packaging?
Yeah, of course. Why wouldn't they? Okay, I mean, if you know, for them it's additional risk as well. For them it's an additional effort. They need to take care of this. They probably need to discuss the design with you, which goes for hours. They bring it in. They probably know that, and if they can make a little bit of money, why wouldn't they? Like our cosmetics producer in Germany, of course he's making money on the glass. Of course he's making packaging or money on the packaging. They're even charging, you know, like putting a sticker on, 5 cents. Folding up the box, putting something in there, 10 cents. Making another label with the best before end date, another 5 cents. And all of those things. And then, of course, I mean, we know we've done a lot of glass sourcing, a lot of cosmetic sourcing for ourselves, of course, as well. When you see that those are insane prices, you say, you know what? I'll bring my own stuff. But then...
What we can do is then go, right, here's our packaging that we want. I can go onto Alibaba, or you can go onto Alibaba or whatever, and find a packaging supplier that does that exact same packaging and negotiate with them on that, because they've only got one thing to sell, and that's the packaging.
Right, but what you got to be aware of is that you got to treat this somewhat nearly like a separate product, because also there you should consider something may go wrong. And Murphy's Law, what may go wrong will go wrong. Check the quality of the packaging. There's nothing worse than, you know, your product is ready, packaging is or should be there, or but the packaging is not there in time, or the packaging is not the right size, or the packaging is not good quality, and all of a sudden everything stops and you store in between just because you need another 2.5 weeks for production of new packaging. So that's, of course, it becomes more effort. But if it's considerable amount, like one of the guys, we've saved them in the first 8 months, we saved them 1.4 million euros, so about $1.5 million, just by splitting up the production, or the not only, but that was a major part as well, splitting up where do glass jars, lids, packaging, main ingredients, fillers, and so all come from.
So explain that. So am I right in understanding that you maybe took like the bill of materials or something? Mm-hmm. And you go, cool, where's this one coming from? How much is the cost of this? So how did that actually work so that you could end up saving money?
When I usually see then the invoices from products, I look at that, it's like there's one fixed cost for everything, including packaging. There's like big alarm bells. Like there's somebody hiding money somewhere in there. Somebody is hiding profit in there. And again, if it's reasonable amount of units, you may then ask and split this thing up and see, okay, so what's the glass? What's the jar cost? What's the lid cost? What's the paper packaging cost? What's the carton box cost? What is the ingredients cost? What is the perfume cost? What is this and that? And then you split them up and you see it's like a paper packaging in this box should not cost whatever, like 80 cents.
And they're trying to work it out like, oh, how do we split this up so it looks real?
Yeah, or they just don't. They just put it out there and then they show you. Because that's also when it comes, for example, to cosmetics or food or nutrition or anything that could be pumped and is liquid or be put in jars. And I don't necessarily want to see the kilogram prices. I want to see how much is that going to be when filled up in 50 milliliters. Because then you can also estimate, so those jars, those sizes of creams will cost me this, plus the glass, plus the sticker, plus the packaging, plus the manual labor. And then you see, I mean, the better, the more transparent you go into your prices, the more, you know, you learn and understand where does the money flow.
Right. Okay. So
where at the same time, at the same time, it may also become not interesting anymore to the suppliers, because they say, oh, so I only do what I'm supposed to do. I'm a filler. I'm a paid filler. Yes, exactly. That was your business. That's the original one. And don't show that you're making 40%. Or yes, I'm sorry. I'm trying to avoid that you're making 40% of your profit on raw materials or packaging.
And I think that's quite hard for people to go, well, why would they show me that information? And obviously they want to show it because if you've done a good job at what you said earlier, selling, right? Not thinking of yourself as a buyer, but as a seller of, hey, I'm selling this opportunity to work with us. Then is that when they're more comfortable to be transparent with saying, well, this is the cost of the jar, this is the cost of the lid, this is the cost of the sticker, this is the cost of the whatever?
They're never really comfortable in doing this because they know they're hiding something, or it's an additional effort for them because nobody really ever asked this before. We've never done it before like this. Yeah, fine, okay, but now today we are here and we'd like to have this question.
And why would they answer? Does that show them that because like we always say to people, there's certain terminology that you don't want to use because you come across as a beginner, right? And then people would take advantage of you. Mm-hmm. Is this one of the elements where a supplier would then look at you and go, oh, they must mean like business. They must know what they're talking about because they're going to such detail on this. Is that fair to say?
It is. I mean, it does show, of course, the producers then that you take more care of it and you have the interest of most likely building a bigger business. And because you want to have those breakdowns, and that's usually what big companies, of course, do, or bigger companies do. At the same time, it may scare them off by them seeing it's like, oh, they really want to squeeze like the last drip out of me. So, you know, it's a fine balance of how far do you go. But I think the basics of whenever you can talk about this, especially when it comes to packaging, I mean, we do so much sourcing for packaging suppliers. In order to always provide for our clients and the packaging to the factory or for our own products. And there's always something, of course, to save, and not the first tier products, but the second tier, like packaging and whatever else goes with it. There's quite a lot hidden also, besides of having the opportunity to optimize your product cost.
I was even thinking, as an existing seller, you might think, well, I'm paying 42 cents or whatever per unit for packaging. Maybe I'm comfortable with my margin. I'm completely happy with my margin, but actually I could be getting a much better quality packaging. I could be reducing the amount of damage that we're getting for the exact same amount of money that we're currently paying. So maybe it's not always like, hey, let's just save some money, but it could be, I'm happy spending that money, but I actually want something better. I want something that's going to do the job, or I can pay for inserts or some nice fillers or whatever it's going to be. In terms of like when you're actually sourcing, so you guys obviously don't just source from one place, but do you use Alibaba?
Of course, as well. I mean, Alibaba, when people say, oh, I've sourced something on Alibaba and it was shit, then sorry for, that was a German word, no need to beep it out. then it doesn't mean Alibaba is bad. I mean, Alibaba is a huge collection of mostly Chinese suppliers, of course. And if something is bad, then it may be the black sheep of the supplier. It's that one guy who's maybe bad. But I mean, Alibaba wouldn't be where it is if Alibaba was so bad. But for international sourcing, I mean, even for China, we use several more platforms, not only Alibaba. I think in total we use, I mean, I've seen a list, we've used more than 55 different platforms besides Googling, besides calling, besides having a network already of finding manufacturers. It's a great collection.
Should we look elsewhere, or should
which country do you want to source from?
Well, I guess the question is, does it matter?
Yes, because I mean, for sure, I guess you have a lot of listeners as well who also sell in the US, and you may say that they may discover when, please do me the favor, always make your customs declaration honest and true, because if not, they may one day screw you over in terms of discovering the truth, and then they'll go dig deep in your company. But if you're then, for example, importing from China into the US, you may have hefty anti-dumping tariffs, import tariffs against Chinese goods. But when you say, for example, you want to source in Vietnam, and you may have the same product for 0% import tariffs instead of 25% plus what many, many Chinese goods have gotten, or also in the UK or in Germany, you may see that an anti-dumping tariff is never against a product. It's against a product from a country, because that country, those products, this category, the government taxes with X percent. But now, if you source in Europe, for example, of course, I mean, you could use the German ones like WLW, Wer liefert was, or Europages, or Global Sources, or Achlieferanten.de, and so many, I think Oleopl for many other platforms out there for every single country and market, because the suppliers, they are in some databases, they want to be somewhere, whether those databases work or not. Another way how you can find them is go into their local Google and start searching in their mother tongue, like whatever. Okay.
So what you're saying there is that, like, look at the, basically it's like the opportunity cost of where you're actually sourcing from. Doesn't, regardless of what the product is, mm-hmm. if you're in the US and you're sourcing from China, can you find the product somewhere else where you're not having to pay this tariff? The product may even be more expensive where you're getting it from, mm-hmm. but overall you're saving on cost and potentially some like logistical issues.
Oh yes. Absolutely. I mean, we've saved our clients now more than $500 million in savings.
Oh my God.
And that's a lot of it. And big amount is, of course, of reducing the purchasing cost of a product itself or shipping costs. Or, I mean, one major thing for the US is anti-dumping tariffs, the import taxes on goods specifically from China.
So maybe in the US there's like sites like ThomasNet or whatever which one it is, or you can try and find something in Mexico or something where it's going to be,
Correct.
quicker
Or even in
delivery.
Vietnam, if you don't care about the container costs are okay with you. Vietnam may have like the neighbor country of China may have the same product. And we've done that in numerous cases where the same product had 0% import tariffs.
So if a company comes to you and they go, right, look, here's our product, this is what we're doing, this is the amount we're paying, blah, 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 blah. Can you go, right, well, we know that you're paying these sorts of tariffs, so we can look at these sorts of countries, and therefore we have a price point we can negotiate with. Is that something that you guys do regularly, essentially?
Yeah, I mean, for sure. Finding a product in a different country is something we continuously do. But again, you may even think even it would be worth looking in China again. If you say you're producing currently in China or you're producing in Germany or in Europe somewhere, not only think about reducing the import tariffs, which aren't always like that super high, besides now, whatever, electric cars that they want to import into Europe. I think they're going to be a bit more expensive soon. But think about optimizing your best sellers. Think about, I mean, again, also, sure, you could come to us, but you can also do this all on your own. Look for the same product with same quality or better for better prices. And
I
that's
think
it's
one of
tedious
our
work.
members came to you and they're like, oh, within a short space of time, you were able to find something that's like 25% cheaper than the best quote they could find, or
Nice.
something like that. So, congrats.
I know you've sent some people over, or some came from Seller Pro Academy, and very much appreciate that.
No, but this is the point. Like, sourcing, I think there's a misconception. Well, maybe not a misconception, but people start on Amazon, right? Or they want to start their physical product business, their brand, and they think sourcing a product is this like, oh, I just go on Alibaba and I send some messages and then I get it done and then it's all good. But the reality is that it's not as simple as that. There's many nuances to it, and there's actually tons of places where you can overpay, you can get poor quality stuff, you can get taken advantage of. And I think the more I learn about it, the more I speak to guys like you and to companies like Zignify, you realize actually how much can be done by just knowing, right? Sometimes when you're starting, you can be unconsciously ignorant, right? You don't know what you don't know.
Yes.
So, one, am I able to get all of that knowledge and expertise by doing it myself over a few products? Probably not, right? The work that you guys have done, it's thousands of products. So you're going to have a lot better understanding about that. However, I'm going to have to pay you guys to do it. So what the big concern people have is, well, if I'm paying for this, like surely I could save money and just do it myself. But what I've seen time and time and time and time again is that having someone that actually knows what they're doing, they will get normally a better product, high quality product, better factory, better supply, whatever. Not even necessarily more expensive, the same price or cheaper than what you found, but they've done it correctly so that you have a lot more confidence that you actually have the right thing. And we know that if we don't have quite the right product, and like you said earlier, the reviews start trickling in, or negative, bad product, poor quality, you'll end up spending more on PPC, you'll end up giving more refunds, you'll end up appeasing more customers, and that money that you think, oh, I'm going to be smart and save this money here, you'll end up paying it later on over the next few months, right?
Most likely.
Yeah, well, yeah. Well, you should be like, yes, absolutely.
I
Yeah,
don't want to pitch
you
myself
guys are
here too
screwed.
much.
Huh?
I said I don't want to pitch myself here too much, but I
No,
mean,
but
to be open,
you've
to be
seen it from
honest,
both sides. You've seen it from
it
both
is.
sides.
Sourcing comes, of course, with experience. Or sourcing, I mean, like I say, it's like you can do all of this, of course, on your own. It's just what we see is people don't do this tedious work of really looking for up to 30 potential producers. I mean, I've done this the first two, three, four times. It was all good. It was all fun. Then it became super annoying. But this is, you probably have heard the terms of like the real money is made in purchasing, not in sales, or you make money when you buy. That's the simple truth and simple fact. I mean, assume that you will be able to sell the products, of course, then you make more money. But the question is really going in, digging in, speaking 20 plus languages like the team does, looking in all of those markets, and then going in and really looking for about 30 potential producers with the hope that they have 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 10, 12, 15, 20 potential valid quotations, which you then can start negotiating about. I mean, it is, I'm super surprised that all of our ladies, you know, they like that job. I wouldn't. But it's, you know, it's always the thing of what is your job? What do you do? And
I
anybody who's
agree. It's
founding a business or a
not
brand, I
easy.
mean, look into revenue generating activities. So when this click in your mind one day comes and it's like, yeah, I should be more focused on selling the product rather than looking into doing all the sourcing. Again, on the other hand, also there's many companies who've successfully built this up internally. And do the sourcing then also on their own. Also fine, you just gotta do this work.
So
It's
the big
tedious, it's
tip
long,
then,
it's exhausting.
what I'm hearing from this is that regardless of how tedious it is or exhausting it is, what's more tedious? Not having the profit, right? Or not being able to make the sales or having a bad product or doing a bit of sourcing and a few conversations, right? And when you think about this, if you have a poor product and you go, I wish I would have sourced it. I wish I would have found a better supplier. I would have sampled more products to make sure I've got the right one. I wish I would have tested it more. I think if we were to take anyone that's had that situation, they would all go back and say, I wish I did more of that, or I did a little bit higher level of due diligence. One question that I really wanted to ask you is, we see like tons of AI stuff happening, right? And I think Alibaba, even you might know more about this, they're talking about how they're introducing AI into their search and all that sort of stuff. How do you see that changing sourcing, either positively or negatively, from your perspective? Have you done much kind of research into that, or are you using any sorts of AI stuff at the moment?
Let me, if I may, still circle around once back to the price. There's one thought that turned around in my head where I was thinking, explaining it when the sourcing usually takes whatever 2, 3, 4, 5 weeks, somewhere around there. And if we cost, for example, let's say $2,000 to $3,000 maybe on a project typically. Question is, could you do in this time? And that's maybe one of the switches somebody needs to make in their mind. If you focus those 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 weeks onto sourcing yourself. And saving those $2,000 or $3,000, could you make more money at the same time and or do something with a new product that's coming in? And I mean, if you want to build a new product, you probably will be able to focus on delivering images, listings, PPC, reviews, and you hopefully make 50,000 or 100,000 or maybe in the first weeks only 10,000 or 20,000 from the product. So the question is always like, what's your time best spent on? Where is your strength? Where should you go in? And what should you focus on revenue generating activities, or should you focus on saving the dollars? And well, on the other hand, spending the same. How much does it cost when you spend this time yourself? AI? Yes, we've seen, of course, what Alibaba is doing there as well. And they're finding, I think, some good solutions as well of re-engineering some of the products and or finding whatever you want to have. We don't see that much yet that AI in the end is also fully taken over sourcing. It's a great thing, and I gave myself also a presentation like, how do you do, for example, in 1.5 hours, the whole research, product planning, competitor research, influencer planning, and so on for a brand in 1.5 hours rather than as early in 6 weeks. But business is still done between the people. It's not an AI that's going to take over the decision whether a supplier agrees to take on a product, and the whole in-between communication is still at a level. I mean, it's so much interaction. It's for sure there are by now podcasts out there that are fully AI generated where two people speak to one another, and it was, and that was done by you know, dropping in content from different types of articles. By the way, Matt Wolf is a cool guy who always shows like AI news. We're using some of that on our own as well. For example, to write, of course, some summaries, sometimes to optimize a product in terms of a briefing, or some of our clients use it to say, that's the product, and can you write me a briefing for my sourcing company, for my photographer, for my PPC company? But I didn't see much yet where you really would say, it's like, wow, that's absolutely revolutionary.
When we're talking about like communication between people, it's between you, brand owner, sourcing company, whoever, and the supplier. Are there best practices when it comes to communicating? Because one thing that, you know, I've always looked at in the past is, you know, we want to make sure that we're giving giving ourselves as much safety as possible. So if we're on Alibaba, we use Alibaba. I don't really want to use things like WeChat or anything like that, because sometimes you might say something, it then gets lost in translation, and maybe then it's not in your contract, and then there's nothing to back it up. But often, if you're not obviously doing work with a company on Alibaba, or you're using WeChat or something like that, what's the best practice for communication so that we can make sure that everyone's safe?
You mean in terms of channel or how to communicate with them?
I think channel, but also how to communicate. Should we jump on, you know, calls and have physical, you know, actual conversations with people? Or do we go to Canton Fair? Like, what is the best thing for us to do?
I mean, one of the things for sure is you can use WeChat, of course. You can use QQ. You can use all the other different Chinese channels. You can call with them. You can have emails with them. But when it comes to whatever needs to be done in the product, put it in the contract. I think that's maybe one of the main rules. Like, it must be in the contract. And if you have an RFID blocker card, like one of my products that created alarms in shopping centers from the safety systems when you walk through, and beep, 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 beep. And yep, yeah, I have it in my contracts to say in there, if three or four more cards at the same time will start beeping, then you have to replace the product, produce it again. Please go and check with those warehouse safety systems if that happens. Such things I have in my contract. So yes, it must be in a contract. And or in a quality inspection. And or, I mean, do a quality inspection before you make the final payment. Send us or send a quality inspection company out there to check, and don't let them do it, because of course it will pass. I mean, use common sense. And when it comes to the point of talking with them and how to communicate with them, I mean, there's a phrase you can use this in every life term or in every life situation, is what's in it for them, right? So I'm trying right now as well to hopefully give some useful input to your listeners, so that you find it useful, they find it useful, they'll come back, of course, as well. But the same way is that, or hopefully, of course, they may also come to us one day. But when you talk to a supplier, again, what I said earlier about ethically correct, think they have a family at home, maybe even kids already. They want to build their own factory. They need to feed their employees, and they want to make a shitload of money. They really want to become rich because they also have a dream. So always leave something for them also on the table and think about their motivation. Now,
like, hey, look, it's not me, the buyer, against you, the manufacturer. It's we're in this together. If we're successful, yeah, you guys are successful. How do we work together? And we're on the same side.
Exactly. Now look at my negotiation. Exactly. Like, if my product takes off, look, we're going to order more from you. I'm planning the previous business or the other one where this will be a complementary product to. We're already selling 50,000 units a year. We're right now here ordering or asking for you like 500 units, but we see in 3, 6, 12 months, we see 2,000, 5,000, 20,000 units. Calculate through for you what that would mean in profit. Our target would be to also bring other products so that you can produce more. You, on the other hand, make more money. So, I mean, literally, like, think about them, and I think you need to kind of have an open heart and think, like, look, I want you to make money. I want to overpay you so you can make profit. Let's do this together.
Yeah, let's make it work.
And that's, I mean, going to them, visiting them, Canton Fair right now. My wife is flying over there. We're doing guided sourcing trips to the Canton Fair or factory tours. So yes, going there, shaking hands, it's like, I mean, this builds a relationship. Would I have not seen you or met you in London? There would still be, you know, like, this is a two-dimensional right now. Who's that? Johnny Bradley, actually. But we met. Look how this changed everything, right? I didn't make you a birthday present yet, or no Chinese New Year gift, but I mean, do this with your suppliers yet.
I really like that. And obviously people think, well, if it's going to cost me $5,000 or $8,000 or whatever to get across to Canton Fair and visit my suppliers, sometimes I think, oh, is that going to be worth it? I've already done my deal with them. But what you're saying is that, look, there may be something else in it that you don't even know yet, sure. until you've met them and they go, cool, these guys.
You'll find
the real
so many
deal.
More suppliers. You'll do so many other things. And you know what? I mean, I find this a luxury. We used to live in China, so we know the country quite a bit. If you haven't been to China, take this as a paid vacation. Do a little bit of work there. Go to Canton Fair, see factories. I mean, first of all, believe me, you'll run around there. You're like, wow, so many products, so many ideas. And you will just come back with 500 samples in your suitcase. My hint is, if you import sex toys, they may take them away from the customs. That has happened to our previous clients when they got a bag full of dildos as samples. But you know, you go around, you see the country, you go
they're,
see
they're
the
for work. I promise, it's for work.
It exactly, yeah. That's they're just samples. No, but really, you learn so much. You see a culture. You get to know a very different life from wherever you come from. Mm-hmm. I mean, you may understand this thing of China differently. And when you look at it, I have to admit, how many people is it right now? 1.7 billion?
There's a few, yeah.
Six, is it still 1.6, 1.7, maybe 1.8? But at the same time, when you always think like, oh, why are they doing this way? And you go over there and you see that 1.6 billion people or more do it that way, and they do it quite successfully. This will change your life view, definitely. I'm not the typical German anymore, as I maybe used to be. We've seen a bit of the world, and that definitely changed our, probably attitude to everything as well.
That's amazing. Because I like, just going back to what you said about, you know, having a relationship with your suppliers, and you know, you want to be on the same page with each other. Like, talking about leverage, it's quite interesting. We've been sourcing a product recently, and we started selling one product and it wasn't quite right. There were some issues with the product. So we've gone back and we've tried to find, you know, a slightly different variation of it. But because we've got quite a lot of leverage, there's just one particular supplier that has a really good product, right? Product's fantastic. Just sampling at the moment. But they are on it, as in on WhatsApp. They're like messaging like 20 times, like calling, and then if you go online, they're like, oh, I've seen you online. Have you got time to talk about this? And we're like, whoa, Jesus, this is a bit too much. But the point there is that because we've built up leverage, we've already tested a product that we're not happy with, and there's extra there. Like, we know that we can sell this product. They're like hungry to do a deal. And whilst maybe they're not the right person, because maybe they're a bit too hungry, it goes to show that it does matter. Like, having these conversations and trying to make it personal, having phone calls with them, or you know, the equivalent of Zoom or whatever, Skype calls, what we're always trying to do, and I think you guys will see this a lot more, is be seen as a seller that's like up here, that mm-hmm. is not doing things typically, they're not mm-hmm. doing things normally, they're doing things to a higher level, so that gives you more clout and more leverage. Even if you've never sourced a product in your life, mm-hmm. if you do the right education and you use a company to do it for you, then you're able to get these prices which you think would be out of touch for you as a new seller, or going into a new product where you don't have a history of saying, oh, we're doing 10,000 units a month or 1,000 units a month. You might not have that history. It's just about how you approach it. Like what you said with going to buy a car. You don't just go and buy a car. You don't just do that. You do the research, you do a test drive, you go to other dealerships, you speak with friends and family about it, you get feedback, you don't just go and do it and buy it and take the first price as, oh, okay, well, I'll just pay that amount. You end up getting ripped off. Mm-hmm. And imagine if you were like, let's look at Porsche, for example. If you want to buy a GT3 RS Porsche, you can't go in and just buy one. You have to have a relationship. You have to go back again and again and again and again and buy loads of stuff. And then eventually you can maybe get this great deal, or you can get this great car with a supplier. You know, you're not necessarily going to get the best payment terms and the best everything straight away. But with that relationship, then you can eventually build trust whereby you both know that you're in it together, and then you can eventually get those good deals, right?
Yeah.
Would you agree with that? Would you add anything on?
Yes, that's true. I mean, relationships make a lot of things much, much easier.
The real thing that people want to know is, what are the horror stories? Where have you seen this really go wrong?
I've seen for one of them. Luckily, it wasn't our client, but he came almost with tears in his eyes to us. And German guy who got a sample, placed the order. Production went through. Shipping went through. Import, everything. Our German bureaucratic import documentation and everything. And he opens the container in the warehouse and looks at the products and is like, that does not look like sample number two. And everything was paid, everything was shipped. So his mistake was he didn't do a quality control before the final production, and it was more than $100,000 loss. Couldn't sell the product, didn't look like anything, so that was a heavy lesson for him. Other things that have gone wrong. Right now, there was one, but we still figured out, two stories maybe still. There was one of the guys where we resourced the product. Actually, there was one which is also insane. We had from an importer, he bought it before, it was about €6 or $6 purchasing cost, and we reduced it to 21 US cents. That's massive. I mean, obviously, just by finding the manufacturer in China. So he's making, selling this like 5,000 times a year. So he's making, I think, $28,000 or euros extra, just by finding cheaper production of same quality. But he now started sourcing from a company which was a husband and wife who separated, and then they went off and both built their own business, both doing the same ways. And that was a mess of getting another mold left and right. So also think about same thing. Suppliers are also human beings. Suppliers are also, they may get separated. All of a sudden the businesses break apart, or some suppliers disappear, or they close because of wealth, or they got arrested for doing something. But there was one other one that I wanted to... right now, an electronic device. I don't want to go in deeper because they are right now a little bit in the news. But we've done the quality control and so, and there were things you could not figure out. Also, that may happen without taking the whole product technically apart and figuring out things. So they purchased a new of the devices in whatever range they have. And from a completely new supplier, first sample looked good. Mass production went through. Quality control of, when the device is assembled looked good. Passed, it went through, and then later on they figured out that they've cheated on the insides, and there were some parts which were probably supposed to be out of a little bit stronger plastic. The whole devices fell apart and broke apart when putting them on power. I was like, oh my god, how can, some suppliers, of course, and again, you could not see this without...
This happened to me.
It's
not plastic, with a slightly different issue. They've said it's one thing, in the contract it's been one thing, everything's been one thing.
Yeah.
The product turns up and it's something else. And it's a big, big problem to have, because maybe the product isn't dead. It's not like we can't sell it. It's just not what we purchased. It's not what we wanted. And the problem is, I've got the products, right? And you still have to do something with them. At the end of the day, going through Alibaba, some like trade assurance is just a nightmare, because they are not on the side of the buyer. Absolutely. Yeah. Categorically, they will side with the factory, which is something that I learned necessarily. I've heard things in the past and I thought, oh, well, if you've got a good contract, then surely nothing bad could happen if you have a good contract. But sometimes things do. And ultimately, we found that we can't trust Alibaba to come in and step in and help us. You've got to make sure that you are taking responsibility to dot your I's, cross your T's, do the quality assurance, have the compliance testing. Yes. And I think it's either you or Yulia did a session for our academy members. And it was said that, if you do, let's say you have 10 productions, right? Over the space of however long, and you do quality tests on the first nine, and then you think, oh, well, the first nine have been good, right? There's been no problems. Let's not do it on the 10th. That's when you have all the issues, right?
Of course. I mean, we don't do for our own products quality control in every batch, but sometimes you come in, you just surprise them. And if they're used to it, and when they all of a sudden know, like on the 10th one, oh, they're not coming by for quality control, leave them in the unknown, you know, surprise them sometimes when next production is like, oh yeah, we're in the country, we're coming by for quality control. Oh my God, oh my God. Then of course they, you know, keep those surprises up. Always let them feel like you could be around the corner every time.
And another way I think you can, yeah. Oh, you got to go, haven't you? Oh my goodness, we've gone over time. Look, Sebastian, it's because I enjoy talking to you so much. So now, of course, if you want to go and learn more, then all you have to do is go onto Google and type in Zignify. You can see it behind them. You can't miss it. Zignify Global Product Sourcing. We'll put it in all the descriptions and stuff. I want to thank you for helping us survive Amazon. And guys, if you liked this episode, found it helpful, please do share it with other sellers. Subscribe, comment if you can so on the platform that you're listening or watching, so that we can help other sellers survive on Amazon. Thank you again for your time. I really appreciate it helping us survive Amazon, but also survive sourcing. We'll see you very soon.
Thank you so much, Johnny. I very much appreciate it. And again, happy to share more, happy to bring in all whatever horror stories or more of the hacks. I love spending time with you together. It's a pretty good show. It's pretty neat. In general, the content that you share, I appreciate.
Oh, thank you so much. Thank you. Lovely.